We're going to go back to Psalms, chapter 127. In the past couple of weeks, I've hit on various points in this chapter, but mostly about the individuals, the mighty man, and how you get there, and how there are different kinds of men, including mighty, and then there are also the children being properly prepared, such as arrows, and so on, such like that. But today, I'd like to close out this unexpectedly short series by pointing out something that's it's almost like I started from the end and went to the beginning. But the beginning is actually where I'd like to end, the beginning of this chapter. It's something important to both factors that we've talked about so far, the mighty man and the children being prepared as they should be. In the first part of the chapter, it gives us a key element to being successful in our own spiritual lives and being able to prep our arrows as they should be. And we're just going to read verses 1 and 2 today. They read, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep." My goodness, I'm really struggling this morning, but we're going to get through this. When it talks about the Lord building the house, it's something that is often skipped over for the latter 3, 4, and 5 verses ahead of it. Verses 3, 4, and 5, rather. Most people do focus on those verses as the preparing the children, preparing yourself, preparing them for the future. That is usually what this chapter is used to build. And we skip over those first two verses. In fact, I don't think I can recall a sermon where it was ever about those first two verses, where except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. It's usually a verse that's mentioned in passing. Like if you're talking about Joshua, or if you're talking about, you know, somewhere in Matthew chapter 7. But I'd like to really hit on these verses today, and we're going to see what we can do. First thing that you notice in these chapters is the focus isn't so much on the children and the mighty man, but they start out focusing about your house and building your house. The home is the basis in which everything will stem out of. It is what will set your spiritual temperature, your attitude. Your children will come out of this one place. All this is centered around your house, your home. That's what your house, but your home. Your home is not a house that you build. It's not a house that you buy. Your home is what you build in the hearts of everybody who live there with you. And that's why it says here, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. It's the place God ordained for you to live and serve in faithfully, but you also got to remember that this is a choice that you have to make. Being a mighty man is a lot easier than choosing this right here. But being a mighty man is dependent upon what you choose to do right here as well. This is probably the hardest part of the process. And we'll get into why later. So why does it say, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it? Well, I refer you to Matthew chapter 7. And I didn't dog ear it, but I'll find it pretty quick. Matthew chapter 7, 24 and 27. And we all know where I'm going, but I'm going to read it anyway. It says, "Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rains descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it." In this chapter, we see the parable of a man that builds his house on sand and on a rock. And there's a couple that kind of correspond with that point in Psalm 127 that I'd like to hit on this morning. Why do you think he built on the sand instead of a rock? Easier. You think he looked at the two and said, man, that might be a better idea, but this is easier. Everyone's done it. Everyone, now, if you're a red-blooded American male, generally you've taken a shortcut on something sometime in your life. And you've quickly figured out that that shortcut is not exactly the best way to do it, only to undo everything you just did and do it the right way. But why did we take that shortcut in building that, in doing that, in going to this place? Why did we take that shortcut? Not because we looked at it and said, this is quicker. But they said, it doesn't look like there's anything wrong with it, and it looks quicker. It wasn't built solely, the decision wasn't built solely on the fact that it was just a quicker and easier solution. It's because it looked the same as the correct decision, except it was easier and quicker. It was veritably disguised in our mind as a quicker, easier decision with no compromise on what we should have done in the first place. So when you're looking at this sand and this rock, when you're fixing to build this house, and you look at the sand, you don't look at the sand and say, this is a little squishier, but it'll work. You look at the sand and you say, well, this is easier and quicker, and I don't see any reason that it's wrong. Sand doesn't always appear wickedly. That sand foundation doesn't always appear to be a bad idea, a compromising idea. It could be the sayings and securities of the church. I heard many sermons on the rock and the sand. And the sand was the world and the rock was Jesus. That's a pretty fair description of what it is. But what the world has taken to make their worldly philosophy, their sand looks a whole lot, if not to the trained eye, looks a whole lot like what the church lays out as the rock. They have become meshed and molded and mixed all around to where it's hard to tell the difference. And to the untrained eye, it looks like just a quicker, easier solution without any compromise. It could be the world's advice to success that doesn't stand up to storms. So you got two different sands here. I know a lot of people that go to church, a First Baptist church, in mostly in Poplar Bluff, some other places, and they all look the same to what the world would call a church. They're building their house on sands because their preacher is what they are reliant on, their preacher, not their Bible. They're reliant on little sayings they put on church signs, not Bible verses. They're reliant on catchy sayings to get them through the day, or a song that they can play on their radio instead of the Bible. One thing that is important to note in this parable is that he likens the rock to people that hear his sayings. He likens this rock to his words, his truth, the truth of God's word that was spoken. In most churches today, that is not the foundation that they have. But if you hear it from a pulpit in a place called a church, people have been indoctrinated to think that is a rock. They've been taught to think that this is a rock. But when the storms and the floods come, they crumble. And great is the fall of them. How many times do we hear a story of somebody that was a great worker for God until a little hardship came into their life and what they had wouldn't hold up? Or that they never had anything, and that's the same as having sand. Sand washes away and you never know it was there. You always know when a rock is there. But so sand doesn't always appear wicked until you do some investigation. It doesn't appear unstable. I've seen people flatten sand out in like a little sand mold. You ever put wet sand in like a sandcastle mold? And you put that in there and you slam it on the ground and you lift it up and there's a sandcastle. Can you stand on that sandcastle? About how much pressure can you put on that sandcastle before it starts crumbling? It looks stable. And some people have sand building contests where they build it humongous sandcastles. And they stand 20 feet high. But you can't walk in them. You can't breathe on them. You can't touch them without putting a hole in it with your finger. But in those pictures, it sure appears real stable. But upon further investigation, sand falls apart with the slightest touch. Number two, building on the rock is the words of God. And as we said before, we often take what anyone says in a pulpit as Bible truth. Do you realize there are people in pulpits that use 2 and 3 Bibles during their service? There are people that don't believe in referring to commentaries. They believe in referring to other versions of the Bible for clarity across all walks of life. There is one church in California, go figure. It is a mega church. It has about 30,000 seats. It has 4 big screen TVs, like Megatrons. It has screens in front of every seat so that you can see them. And it has 3 pastors that preach all at once. At once. And whoever you like listening to, they use a different version of the Bible, dress differently, and are different crowds because Jesus came for all men. And so they preach as all men to all men. That is what people are getting as the words of God nowadays. Just like we had the false prophets in the day that would just preach to you whatever you wanted to hear, we have the same thing today, except it's under the ruse of Christianity. And that is a Baptist church. They're not even non-denominational. They're a Baptist church. You imagine their bus route. How many people they got to go pick up, 30,000 seats. But this means that we must learn from the written word, listen to the Holy Spirit, and know the context of the Bible. Most independent fundamental Baptist churches do use commentaries. Most of us is probably set in a couple services such as that. I had one, and the commentaries he used, there was one commentary he used, cannot remember the name of it. He was a popular Bible figure. Cannot remember his name. He's pretty modern though. And he was the poster boy for all the Baptist colleges. And he wrote a commentary on the entire Bible in just 6 years. If you look at John Henry and a couple other people, it took him 6 years to write one commentary. But he wrote an entire one and he sold it for $64 for the entire set. And so he bought this commentary and he would read the Bible and he said, and in this commentary this means this. And he would read the commentary for that verse and then preach to you the commentary as it was told. Is that using the interpretations of the Bible, or is that taking the interpretations of man and preaching that? This rock that we're building on has to be on the correct, inspired word of God. Mighty men don't come from little shacks on the sand. They don't train just anywhere. You got to look at their basis, their foundation. They had a home. They had a place to come back to. They had roots. And when you build your house on the sand, how many times are you going to build that house back? How many times is it going to fall greatly? How many times are you going to let it fall and keep building the thing back, thinking it's going to hold this time? How many times do we as people come back to what we were doing before and say, it'll work this time? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and hoping for or thinking there'll be a different result. So this house on the sand that this guy is building over here is built on what he believes is the correct foundation, even though he is ignoring the correct foundation right before him. I know a couple of people right now that are that have been presented the correct foundation. The correct foundation has been laid. It's been given to them. And yet they refuse to build there. They refuse to use those materials. And they're so caught up in building their house on the sand over and over and over and doing home improvements to try and make it better that their arrows are laying by the door drying out. The arrows are not being prepared. He is not being prepared as a mighty man himself. When your house keeps falling down, you have no time to improve yourself. You have no time to prepare your arrows to go out. You have no time to ready your home for the storm that's coming. Because every time a storm comes, you have to rebuild. Except you have a big mess you got to get rid of first. So why do people build on the sand? Why do people continue to clean up their mess and build again? We'll probably never know. Because until they come to the realization that the sand does not work, their house is going to keep falling down. Their life is going to continue to be a mess. Because there's more than one storm that comes in life. There's going to be more than one rebuild. Why do you think people turn over a new leaf all the time? Because everything in their life has been demolished. Everything in their life has fallen down, has been knocked down by the storm. And so they feel the need to try again, to start fresh, they say. The only fresh start you can have that'll work is on the rock of Christ. Number three, no poem again this time, but we're going to go to number three. Notice when you pick your foundation, no matter what, you have to do some work to get that house up. When you finally come away from that sand and realize that's not going to work, and you turn to the words of Christ that are set, that are firm, that will not move or change ever, there is still some work to be done. But builders are never independent. I've sold plenty of 3/4-ton trucks to contractors, but they don't buy work trucks. They don't buy LTs. Oddly enough, they buy LTZs or High Country 3/4-ton Chevrolets. Why do you think that is? Contractors don't do the work. Contractors don't get their truck dirty. And it's never been dirty when they come back to ask me a question about it. And it's not because they wash it. Contractors give the contract to other people and benefit off them. They don't do the work. There is always somebody that has to do the work, however, and they report to that contractor. Another interesting thing about the people they contract to is that the builders don't draw the blueprints. The builders don't pour the foundation. The builders don't independently work and do what they think needs to be done to that house. The builders report to the contractor, get the blueprints from the contractor, and the contractor already has a foundation laid when he contracts his building out. This is very interesting. There is never going to be success with your own blueprints. There is never going to be success when picking your own foundation. There will never be success for you or for your family as long as you're doing all the work independently. The independent contractors that I know about drive beaten up trucks that are always dirty, and they can never make any money because they can never get hired because they never know what they're doing. And to all the independent contractors out there that do know what they're doing, I'm sorry. You must pick up a hammer, submit to build on that foundation by the blueprints laid out in this book and with the materials given to you by His words. There is work involved when you make this choice. Joshua said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." But what did he have to do? Did they just say, okay, and they turn around and start serving? He pulled the earrings out of their ears. He took the idols out of their house. He had to clean house and completely rebuild from the ground up on it. And not everyone followed him, just his family. When you make this choice, it's not going to be the easy one. And it doesn't mean everyone's going to follow you. We used to have songs like that, where we didn't care if anyone followed us. That we didn't care what happened on the journey, because we knew that the end of the journey is all that mattered. There are certain tools you need to start with to build a house. You have the plans, you have the materials, you have the foundation, but you have to put it all together. And you have to make sure it stands up and will stay up for your family. The beginnings of a mighty man are not when he goes training for war, it's when he trains for the everyday. It's when he can take that hammer and swing it continually until the nail is driven. It's when he can lift that wall and prop it and make sure it stays up. It's for when he can maintain his house and make sure it stays where it needs to be during that storm. Because when a storm comes, you don't just hunker down in the middle of your house. When I was in Alabama, we had two or three tropical storms and a hurricane every year. And we all knew it was coming, and there were certain regulations your house had to meet to be built in that part of Alabama, coastal Alabama. Because a storm could knock buildings over, and I've seen them do it. But just because that building met that code did not mean that you could just hunker down in the middle and wait for the storm to pass. Most of us went outside, but that's beside the point. You had to have plywood over the windows. A lot of times you put something over your siding so it didn't blow off. You prepared for the storm that someone told you was coming. You prepared for the winds and the rain and the hail and whatever else was going to rain down on you and whatever else was going to blow into your house. You weren't taking any chances of your house being damaged, of the family in there being unsafe. You took the necessary precautions to protect your house. So being a mighty man doesn't start with being a mighty man in battle. It starts with being a mighty man in securing your own house. So when you are given the blueprints, when you're given the materials, when you're given the foundation, you're given the tools, who would you say is building your house? But when you find your own foundation, your own tools, do your own labor, who's building that house? Ask yourself that question today. Who's building your house? What are you using to build your house? What foundation are you standing on? Sand shifts often, and that changes plans for your house very often. Pretty sure my house is about to fall. But if you put a proper footing and foundation, that anything under it can shift with foundations ready for it and will stay strong. How do you think those buildings in New York can stand that wind blowing them all year long, that high up in the air, and not just topple over? Correct preparations were done. It's up to you who to take your plans from, where you're going to get your materials, and which foundation you're going to build on. But it's also up to you to take up that hammer, use those materials, use those tools, use those blueprints correctly, because if you can't read them, it doesn't work. And build your house. Who's building your house? Except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it, because it's going to fall over again. When you build, we were building a shed one time, we didn't prop up one wall the way it should have been, and a wall fell over. Everything we did to get that wall up is now in vain. Because it's not up where we need it, it's down on the ground where we're going to have to pick it up and do it again. Who here has ever heard the term, you're making double work for yourself? I hear that a lot. I need to start hearing a little less. But it's what it is. You're making double work, triple work. It's in vain that you're doing it. There are so many people out here where life is meaningless. You always ask, what are you looking for? And someone sarcastically will answer me, the meaning of life. It's a daily basis. It's just their knee-jerk reaction or knee-jerk answer. What are you looking for there, bud? The meaning of life. No, I'm really looking for this. But I think in their mind somehow they really do mean it. Because they always answer. Because when you build a house and it falls down, you build a house and it falls down, you build a house and it falls down again, what is the meaning of life? You'll never know. You've been building your house for 4 years, over and over. You don't have plans. No one's given you a blueprint. You don't know where the end of this thing is. You need to take up your hammer and choose which way you're going to go today. It does take a little while to build something. And the sooner you start, the sooner it'll be done. Who's building your house?